Whether you are beachside, poolside, or even inside, summer vacation offers many people a chance to read a great book. Every year, book reviewer Alan Chews brings his recommendations for summertime reading.
I can't remember a summer like this before, with so many terrific new books to spend time with. Novels, story collections, historical fiction, memoirs. Our cups runneth over. There's just not going to be enough time to read them all. But here are a few I heartily recommend. First, Charles Baxter's Midwestern Midsummer Night's comedy, The Feast of Love. Baxter's going to read to us from the opening chapter as the sleepless and moonstruck narrator begins a nocturnal ramble through the streets of Ann Arbor, Michigan, in search of a story.
Above me in the clear night sky, the moon, Earth's mad companion, is belting out show tunes. A Rodgers and Hart medley, this is, including Where or When. The moon has a good baritone voice. No, someone from down the block has an audio system on. Apparently, I am still quite sleepy and disoriented. The moon, it seems, is not singing at all.
Next, Edna O'Brien's lush and lusty Wild Decembers, about an Irish country land feud, an ill-fated love affair. We've asked O'Brien to read part of the novel's prologue.
Clunther, it is called. A locality within the bending of an arm. A few scattered houses. The old fort, Limedank and Jabbery. And from the great whishing belly of the lake, between grassland and callowland, a road, sluicing the little fortresses of ash and alder. A crooked road to the mouth of the mountain. Fields that mean more than fields, more than life, and more than death, too. In the summer months, calves going suck, suck, suck. Blue dribble threading from their black lips. Their white faces stark as clowns. Hawthorn and whitethorn. Boundaries of dreaming pink. Byroad and bog road. The bronze gold grasses in a tacit but unremitting sway. Listen, shiver of wild grass and cluck of wild fowl quickening.
Back to the American wild for Storm Riders, an emotionally engrossing novel about an Oregon man and his troubled Alaskan Indian foster child, by Craig Leslie.
Clark strained to see Angoon through the small plane's rain-streaked window, but all he saw below were clouds, misty gray-green islands, and the rough waters of Chatham Strait. The plane bounced around in the air currents, making him queasy. Leaving Sitka, the ride had been exciting. Coming over Baranoff Island, Clark had seen three mountain goats in the high alpine meadows. Brilliant yellow flowers covered the mountain slopes. However, as the weather became gloomy closer to Angoon, Clark began to feel uneasy about the journey. How would Wade respond towards him after 2 years' separation? How much would the young man be changed?
Among genre novels we're spending time with is William F. Buckley's Spy Time, his colorful and informative biographical fiction based on the life and adventures of one of America's most fabled CIA counterintelligence officers.
My name is James Jesus Angleton, he wrote, and then spoke the lines out, yes, that's J-E-S-U-S. For most of my professional life, I went out of my way to suppress my middle name. He would explain that. One picks up mannerisms when young, mannerisms we have no reason to be proud of. One of mine was to hide my middle name. How is it I came by such a name, you might wonder? I was given that name by my Mexican mother. She was 17 when my father, Hugh, married her in Nogales, Arizona. Nací en la frontera, acá desde lado. She used to sing that to me, born over here on this side of the border. Sounds better in Spanish. For a long while, they, Mom and Dad, spoke to each other mostly in Spanish. My father learned how to do that while fighting in Mexico under General Pershing, chasing after Pancho Villa. A Pancho Villa, a popularized rogue, I paused to remark. My father, when I was very young, let me in on the true character of that Wild West hero, and I tucked it away. A piece of intelligence.
I'd also recommend Max Bird's novel Grant, an excellent portrait of one of our greatest generals. This one won't be available until August, but it's well worth the wait.
he was 1,000 times more complicated than he looked, and that was the mystery of him. Lincoln knew it instinctively. Lincoln knew all about the mystery of character. In the worst days after Shiloh, when that jackass Whitlaw Reed had written his famous article about Grant, the bungler, and the butcher, the radical Republicans had dispatched a senator over to the president's mansion to demand that Grant be fired. And Lincoln heard him out, thought it over in silence, then shook his head. "I can't spare this man. He fights."
The AK-47s were chewing up everything. Not supposed to be any tough stuff out here.
More fiction out of the world of history and war.
Looks like the major snapped the string on me. Abraham Blackman tried to force himself down into the wet ground. Buttoned down, and they're looking for me. Especially that one, he thought, as a patch of grass was chopped up close to his face. Blackman pressed down again, and with that extra movement, thought he saw a cobra slide away. Once any kind of snake might have made him recoil for a few seconds. Not now. It was the cobra or that 47. He'd take his chances with the cobra.
John A. Williams reading from Captain Blackman, a reprint of a 1972 novel in which we see a number of American battles through the eyes of a black military everyman. Now, for a good midsummer night's chill, there's House of Leaves, a fascinating experimental new horror novel about a residence in the Virginia countryside with all the square footage in the world by debut novelist Mark Z. Danielewski. The style is quite distinctive. More than a realtor's nightmare, it's James Joyce meets H.P. Lovecraft.
Leaving most of their equipment behind, the two men head out in pursuit of the sound. For 40 minutes, they hear nothing and are about to give up when their ears are again rewarded with another distant cry. Based on the rapidly changing video timestamp, we can see another 3 hours passes as they weave in and out of more rooms and corridors, often moving very quickly, though never failing to mark their course with neon arrows and ample amounts of fishing line. At one point, Navidson manages to get Tom on the radio, only to learn that there is something the matter with Karen. Unfortunately, the signal decays before he can get more details. Finally, Reston stops his wheelchair and jabs a finger at a wall. On High 8, we witness his gruff assertion. How we get through it, I don't have a clue, but that crying's coming from the other side.
For lovers of the short story, there are a number of fine collections just out. I'd recommend In the Gloaming by Alice Elliott Dark, deeply felt domestic stories. Here's Dark reading from the title tale in which a mother finds herself playing nurse to her adult son who's dying of AIDS.
He wanted to talk again, suddenly. During the days, he still brooded, scowling at the swimming pool from the vantage point of his wheelchair, where he sat covered with blankets in spite of the summer heat. In the evenings, though, he became more like his old self, his old, old self, really. He became sweeter the way he'd been as a child, before he began to gird himself with layers of irony and clever remarks. He spoke with an openness that astonished her. No one she knew talked that way, no man at least. After he was asleep, Janet would run through the conversations in her mind and realize what it was she wished she'd said. She knew she was generally considered sincere, but that had more to do with her being a good listener than with how she expressed herself. She found it hard work to keep up with him, but it was the work she had pined for all her life.
There's sharp and deep and funny fiction about 20-somethings coming of age in the debut collection called Sam the Cat by Matt Clam. Story writer Clam reads from the opening of Issues I Dealt With in Therapy.
We were on a preppy East Coast resort island in the middle of summer. We just flew in for the wedding of my incredible friend Bob. We were here on vacation, away from the hot city. I was so glad to be out of that effing house. The simple fact that it's a plane trip away and you're staying in a hotel on this fake, preppy island, and because you're not married and yet you're at a wedding together, because you're too cheap to go on decent vacations, because your own day-to-day life could use some tuning up, and like any sane person, you've already effortlessly erected an invisible barrier between yourself and that life back there, and you're now pretending that it isn't real. And because Bob had become this big deal, your most skyrocketing friend, and Bob's wedding weekend finally arrived, well, it's a new beginning, and I was feeling the excitement.
From Washington State writer Sherman Alexie, a vivid news story collection, The Toughest Indian in the World. Listen to Alexie, with a little help from a friend, read from the opening of the story called St. Junior.
That winter, on a full moon Monday on the Spokane Indian Reservation, the first snow fell sometime between midnight and dawn, when most of the reservation residents, Indian and white alike, were asleep. Except for the Cold Spring Singers, those six Spokane Indian men who sat at a drum on top of Lookout Mountain and sang the indigenous blues.
Well, y'all, hey, doll, hey, doll, hey, doll. On the road and on the street, they're just trying to keep the beat. Hey, ah, hey, ah, hey.
And finally, a distinctive memoir out of the world of music, Miles and Me, by poet Quincy Troop. Troop assisted the great and famously difficult trumpet player and composer Miles Davis with his autobiography and lived to tell some tales.
The most striking thing for me about Miles's physical makeup, besides the extraordinarily beautiful color of his deep black skin, was his eyes. They were riveting. You could see his resolute sense of self in his eyes, which were large and round, with a lot of white surrounding the iris. When he looked at you, it was with a direct, unflinching, hard gaze. You saw and felt his genius in those eyes, feminine, like his face. His eyes, when he was happy, could be very soft, almost delicate. When he was angry, they could be as fierce as his words. Sometimes, when I was looking at him, he had an almost spiritual, mystical effect on me. I remember looking at his face many times while we were talking and actually hearing some of his tunes, especially All Blues.
A splash of the cool to help during the long, hot summer days ahead.
Alan Chews is our reviewer. He teaches English at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia.